Hi, I'm Manos. This is Maria, founders and directors of the EV Real Estate Group, and welcome to On the Couch with
Manos and Maria.
That's it.
So this is where we go behind the scenes to uncover what makes entrepreneurs and industry providers, business owners, tick, and also what they think of the future in real estate.
We're really looking forward to sharing all the inside stories of what it actually takes to run a really successful business. Whether you're starting out, whether you're thinking about starting your own business, whether you're currently running a real estate agency, and how you can obviously make it better. So, hope you enjoy. So hi guys, and welcome to another edition of On the Couch with Manos minus Maria. As per a previous edition, she is away still overseas, and we're very much looking forward to having her back. But today's interview is going to be with Julie Anderson. We're really blessed to have Julie Anderson as our Head of Human Resources Department. She handles all our agreements with all our administration staff, our corporate team, and all sales agents. And today's topic that I'd like to bring to you guys is all about how are we meant to legally pay sales agents. So if you're a business owner out there, this will be a really good session where you can investigate, saying that are you meeting all the legal requirements? And if you're a sales agent as an employee out there, to understand what your rights and obligations are, and of course, making sure that you're being remunerated appropriately. So welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you, Manos. Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be a part of the series.
Oh, good, good. Thank you. And it has been great so far. I must admit, the feedback from the audience has been phenomenal. So I'm getting lots of messages and private messages, which has been really, really good. So, but welcome to the show. And today's topic is going to be, we're going to talk about the way sales agents need to be remunerated legally. So we're going to talk about some legal aspects, and then we'll go into some examples and some breakdowns to make sure that everyone is being paid according to obviously the legislation. So first of all, what award do sales agents fall under?
So the Real Estate Award applies to sales agents. It's quite an extensive document. I think as a business owner, you should be very familiar with that document. But I can understand there's probably a lot of confusion out there, because I relate human resources legislation sometimes to chess, because it depends on what move someone makes or what the scenario is will depend on what applies. So,
and that award is Australia-wide?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So regardless of which state, there is an award for sales agent employees. And if you can just run through the mechanics of it, what's the basics?
The basics of the Real Estate Award is that there's a minimum prescribed wage, and that wage is a base. Superannuation is on top of that. And there's certain allowances as a sales agent that need to be taken care of. For example, a car allowance. So, of course, the job involves a lot of travelling.
And that is compulsory, isn't it?
It is compulsory, yes. So there's different ways to satisfy that car allowance. You can provide a company car, and therefore you don't need to pay a car allowance, because it's all of the expenses are taken care of and incorporated. And then there's also phone allowances as well, because the job heavily involves being on the phone, so the employee must be compensated for.
So if they're using their own private phone, but I know in some instances, employed sales agents are provided with the phone, so then obviously there's no remuneration
allowance
for
that. It's fully paid for, so there's no expense to the employee.
So current as of, say, the 1st of April, what is that minimum wage?
Yeah, so the minimum wage for a sales agent, first 6 months in the industry. So regardless of whether it's their first 6 months with you, it actually applies against their experience, is so, 34...
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so that's really important to... I thought it's worth repeating. So whether a sales agent has started with you or they've been pre-existing with another employer, the 6 month incorporates those two terms. So if someone comes in totally brand new into our firm, their 6 months starts from day one. Had they been employed prior with another firm as an agent's representative, then that time period is included. And if that exceeds 6 months, well, they start as a different level, don't they?
That's right.
Great. Yes. Okay, perfect.
So the base salary for the first 6 months is $34,975.20. And then you add superannuation and the allowances on top of that. So
and superannuation is 9.5%. So you're looking at approximately another $3,400. $400 on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, car allowances are an interesting thing because there's different ways that you can apply car allowances. So the one to choose, of course, is the one that is an even balance for compensating the employee and also what works with the structure and how the job or how many Ks that person's actually doing. So one way of doing it is to charge a per kilometre rate, 78 cents per kilometre, which is quite high compared to another way of working it. But that's to a maximum of 400 kilometres a week.
Right.
So if that person's doing 400 kilometres a week, that's over $300 a week, which makes it a very high car allowance to use. So I would only use that.
So a business owner, really, if I look, taking my my numbers hat, if a real estate owner was obliged to pay that amount for that particular car, and we'll go into the types of cars in a moment, you're far better off purchasing a car. So from a business perspective, you are far better off getting a company car on a lease and supplying that to the sales agent.
Yes, yeah. So to use the 78 cents per kilometre, that would be if the person's not doing a great deal of kilometres, and that's where that one would set in. The other way of doing it is with a weekly standing charge, so that compensates the employee for actually holding that car for the purposes of work. The standing charge is usually calculated on a 48 week year.
Okay, cool.
Because you don't have to, as an employer, compensate the employee for when they're on annual leave or any unpaid leave, etc. So it depends on what the way you want to structure it. Sometimes with our property management salaries, we do make it a 52 week because the salary package ends up being competitive to the market.
Great.
So,
but that's a choice that we make.
That's right. Yeah. But if you're going to go pure legislation, 48 week year for the car allowance. So a standing charge is the weekly charge, and then there's a kilometre charge. So for a real estate agent, I would say it'd probably be highly unusual to not do any kilometres during the week. The charges for kilometres are something around 11 cents per kilometre through to about 15 cents per kilometre. And the standing charge is also on the basis of the age of the employee's car and also the engine size. So there's quite a lot of fluctuations in there as well. Another way of doing it is to do a lump sum per week. But that's quite expensive because that takes into account the standing charge and kilometres, and the kilometres that are accounted for in that standing charge are quite high. So I think it's best to look at what the person's really going to do in the business and get the right balance of
That's fairly remunerating the employee for use of the car.
Absolutely.
And obviously not detrimental to the business from a profit
perspective. So not underpaying or overpaying.
So being fair according to legislation.
Yes.
So can you give one of, without mentioning names, what sort of allowances are we paying our employed sales agents?
I would say as average around the $5,000 per year mark standing charge, and then there's the kilometres on that. So I was doing a few calculations. It is quite high, and I think you really need to look at, that as a business, if you want to get your brand out there, get a branded car for that employee so that they can use that and incorporate that as a part of your salary package, which might be attractive to people, to have a company car so they can use it for private purposes, or you can have a fleet that's available on site as well. So, there might be some flexibility there for...
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
If you've got certainly parking facilities to have a fleet of cars and to keep on premises overnight, that's certainly a great option. And so would we be paying the standard $5,000 standing charge, and would be adding another $100 to $150 per week, say, for the kilometre rate? So
The kilometres, I think, on average, work around the $40 to $50 mark, depending on how busy...
Okay.
The person's been. Yeah. So it's under that lump sum rate.
Great.
That's why I think the lump sums compared to what I've seen are not a great way to go for our business.
Yeah. So if from our perspective, we're probably paying around the $600 to $700 per month per employee under the lump sum and the kilometre rate, a combination of both. So that works out quite well for us.
Mm.
And again, we the way we structure our business is that we bring on sales agents, and then those sales agents, obviously we encourage them to go into business for themselves under your brand, your business model. And that's obviously a topic for conversation for another episode. Okay, so that's the basic, the minimum. So any sales agent that is employed must receive that minimum. It is for a 38-hour week.
Yes.
There's some confusion with holiday pay. do they get paid the holiday pay? And we'll talk about debit credits and all that. But my understanding is, and the way we operate, is holiday pay is an absolute must based on the salary.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. So when somebody's away, say they're taking a week's annual leave, they would receive their pay as normal. There is actually a holiday loading on the real estate award.
Which is?
17.5%. So for the weeks they're away, it's an additional 17.5% annual leave loading.
So just to put that in perspective, as an example, if the weekly gross wage is, say, $750, a further 17% needs to be added onto that for the 4 weeks of annual leave that he's taken. And then, of course, there's the normal entitlements like sick pay.
Yes.
And, you know...
Ten days a year, mm-hmm. That's accrued as the year goes by. So every quarter, it's 2+ days. To get to the 10. So, and that rolls over the following year
yes,
as well.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Now, there's also the talk, okay, a sales agent when they first start in the industry is certainly not doing 38 hours a week. It's more than likely more. So how are employers and employees protected in that respect?
Mm. Look, I think that employers need to be very careful of that and make sure that that employee is actually performing in the role and that they're going to bring to the business commissions over and above, so bonus systems, to make sure that they're compensated for those hours.
For those extra hours, yeah. Especially after hours
yes.
work.
Yeah, so there's award flexibility as well, but it is something to be mindful of because the person on a minimum wage should always be ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so if they've done extensive overtime and there haven't been any bonus payments in commission, they're actually being underpaid for that period.
So it's really critical. A lot of people sort of... miss that point about employed sales agents. And let's talk about the debit credit system. And I know we don't operate a debit credit system where a sales agent is employed and then they have to pay back that, what they call a retainer. Now that's, people really get confused with that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll put it into perspective and correct me if I'm wrong. So if a sales agent comes and works for you and they're employed for 3 months and they get paid their weekly minimum allowance according to legislation and they don't write any commission whatsoever, $0 for 3 months, there is no legal opportunity for the employer or has no legal right to claw back that money from the employee. They are an employee. When the employee, if the employer was to leave that business, that is what you call a sunk cost in the business, and you can't claim that back. So the conception that there's the debit credit and employee owing the business is just really false. Yes, you can claw back monies from commissions owing once you exceed a certain level, but it can never fall lower than the minimum award wage.
Mm.
And that's really, really important to understand as a business. And what we've chosen to do is that we have a performance-built criteria. So we have all our employed sales agents on a salary. We have them paid according to obviously the minimum award on a weekly basis, the car allowance, phone allowance, if they supply those. And once they reach a certain level, so in our business, it does vary from office to office, but just as an example, we say the first $100,000 of GCI written by a sales agent, that entitles them to the minimum award for that 12 months. As soon as they exceed a dollar over that $100,000, we start putting in a bonus level. And the bonus level can be 30% for every dollar thereafter, or 40% or 50%, depending on how far above the $100,000 they go. And I'm happy to talk in detail. If someone wants to private message me or give me a call to talk about how we structure that and be totally transparent and obviously fair for the employee. So we don't do the debit credit. We look at a sales agent achieving that target and then going over that mark to start doing bonuses. So in an example, if a sales agent was only going to do $100,000 in a 12-month period, they would have achieved their minimum award of $34,500 approximately, plus the car allowance, plus the phone allowance, plus super. That equates to about 42 to 45% of the gross commission. And we don't take any Franchise fees or any marketing levy off the top of our commissions. It is pure commission that's been charged to a vendor outside of marketing, vendor paid marketing. And that's what we pay the sales agent on. So that's a normal sales employee. Another way that sales agents are engaged is commission only. And really, we need to get into the commission only. Can we talk about the commission only?
Yeah, so the commission only can be a bit of a minefield because there's conditions specified under the real estate award that you must meet for someone to be on a commission only agreement. First of all, that agreement must be in writing, which is pretty fundamental. But, you know, I do speak to a lot of people outside of the EV group in the industry and they say, oh, I never had an agreement, which I find quite startling from both sides, really. Mm. But the key one is that they must be in the industry for more than 12 months.
In the industry for over 12 months?
Yes.
So employed as a sales agent.
In the last 5 years.
In the last five years.
So they must be able to demonstrate that in that time as well that they have earned through that role the minimum awards plus all of the allowances. So they must show group certificates and things like that to demonstrate that they've reached those levels because the law is looking at saying, well, let's protect the employee. They can't come along and work for someone commission only and earn nothing all year or nothing for a month or 2 months because they don't have that skill and knowledge behind them to do well in the role.
Right. So minimum 12 months employment prior within a 5 year period. And within that 12 month period, they must have met the minimum of earned the minimum salary.
In that 12 month period.
So in our example of say $45,000, they must have had a group certificate which outlines $45,000 of gross commission allowances and superannuation.
Yeah.
So that's really, really important to understand. Mm. And what happens when you employ someone on a commission only basis and they work in your organization for 3 months? And they don't earn any commission during that period of time.
Yeah. So you're obligated to pay them and you're obligated to pay them ahead as well, which is an interesting one. So they should never be behind that minimum wage schedule. So if somebody's earned nothing in a week, or it depends on your pay period, I guess, if it's going to be weekly or fortnightly or monthly, then arguably they should still be receiving the minimum at that time that it falls due.
So really, technically speaking, someone starting on commission only, if they're not writing figures straight away, the employer's in breach.
Technically, yes.
Technically, they're in breach. Yes. Okay, so that's an interesting space. A lot of people might not know this. Now, of course, we've got to put some logistics and some common sense to the equation. Not so much a logistics, some common sense to the equation. If a sales agent comes on board and they're on commission only and you've engaged with them on a higher the normal split because they're not taking a impacting your cash flow, they're not taking a salary straight away, then it's got to be understandable that there is going to be some sort of delay from the time that they actually secure a sale and that money gets paid into account. But you're going to be well ahead very, very quickly. Well, you should be, but it's really important as an employer to monitor that. Otherwise, you can fall behind.
Yes.
So I have seen in some cases where an employee commission only did really, really well in the first 3 months, earned, for example, $20,000, and they can accumulate all that in the first 3 months, but then they've done nothing for the next 6 months, so they've totally fallen behind that minimum base wage for that 9 month period. So really, as an employer, if you're considering putting someone on commission only and you want to make sure that all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed, ensure that that employee is certainly capable of doing the numbers and ahead of the minimum requirements. And of course, most sales agents are not coming into the business. There's no way a sales agent comes into the business just to earn the minimum award. That's reality. But the reality is most people only earn the minimum award in their first 12 to 18 months. And I think it's really it's important as business owners that we really look at the young people and brand new people, doesn't matter of age, when they come into our industry, that it does take 12 to 18 months to really get established and to provide them the opportunity to do that and the space and time. Yes, I truly believe there's been a shift that there's so much opportunity now for someone who's extremely hungry to really hit the ground running and start exceeding their targets, because there's so many tools available, but they're the rare ones. You know, I would say mm-hmm. it would be 1 in 10. It's the percentage is actually increasing. We're seeing a lot of new people coming into our organisation in all our offices, and they're obviously being provided the right tools and the right guidance by the leadership team to really excel in those first 3 to 6 months. But there's always going to be the exception that someone is going to take. They're the exception to the rule, I should say. Most people do take a little bit longer.
Yes. The other thing with commission only too that it's good to be mindful of is that you really need to specify what that commission only includes as well. So what's your commission rate going to actually be? Is it like 60% and therefore it includes superannuation and allowances and all of those things?
So, and it's not wrong to say it's 60% inclusive of all allowances and superannuation.
You can do it. You just need to be specific.
Exactly.
So that everybody's across the same information and understanding.
And so long as they're totally clear. And it also needs to, and I will give an example on the whiteboard of breaking down the commission. So is the 50% or the 60%, or some people want 70%, as many are in our organisation, is it after franchise fees? Is there some deductions at the top for marketing levies? What is the actual percentage from the gross commission being charged to a vendor, ex-GST, of course? And I will go onto the whiteboard in a moment just to break it down, because that's really, really important. Because what I've found, and I'm sure you found interviewing many past employed sales agents, is that they say they're on 50-50, but when you break down the commission, by the time they've taken out the franchise fees, they've taken out the marketing levy, and sometimes some other costs, personal marketing, all that sort of thing, they're on like 30%. So, which again, there's no right or wrong, and I'm not here to debate whether we should be paying high commission splits or low commission splits to sales agents. What I'm saying is be aware of the structure that you're under, the structure that you are employing your sales agents, and be totally transparent so there's no confusion at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I think one thing that I always speak to our people about when they're growing their teams and onboarding is, and it's more people that are just starting out doing that, is to look at the spirit in which they bring people on board. So it's got to be a win-win situation. You know, you've got to question why someone would come on board and join your team if they're not going to be looked after and have the opportunity to do well. So, that's one thing that I always start my conversations with. There's another thing that you can do with award, and it's called award flexibility. So you don't have to pay the minimum wage. You can actually pay more than that. And you can allow for all of the allowances in that.
Great.
So you just need to be over, but you need to monitor that as well, depending on how close it is to the award that you are.
So let's just put a prime example. So we know the award is sitting around the $40,000 to $42,000. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, with a car allowance, it hits $45,000.
Yes.
So if you said that you're bringing someone on a salary of $52,000, $1,000 a week, but that includes the superannuation.
Yes.
But we haven't separated the allowances in that.
Yes.
We'd still be ahead of the...
Yes.
We're legally...
Yes. Depending on their car size.
Well, let's hope they're all driving four cylinders, small cars.
Because some
and
of them
like
are
that, yeah.
On standing and then kilometres would be close to $10,000 a year. So,
So 2,600
cc's. I'm learning a lot about cars in my job. But 2,600 cc's engine size and above and under 5 years is quite high. So it's a new big car.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just have to be careful. You can't say, oh, okay, I've included $5,000 car allowance in that, and then find out the employee's car is a whole lot bigger and new. Mm-hmm.
So we've covered a lot, but let's just talk about the actual differences between the base rate and then obviously someone who's a little bit more experienced, because there's a 6-month qualifying period. Is that right?
Or there's a 6-month probationary period on every role.
Okay, that's really important to understand. So a sales agent comes into an organisation, whether they've had past experience or not with another agency, as a new employee.
Yes.
Here. Or obviously at the agency, they have 6-month probation.
That's right, yeah. So that gives the employer and the employee the opportunity to find out whether they're aligned and suited to the position in the company. So It's a very important time, I think, to make sure that the person's inducted well, that the expectations and guidelines are clear, that they know exactly what KPIs they need to meet, and that those discussions are regular. And it should never be a surprise to anybody at the 6 month point that they're going to either stay or that it's not working out. So it's an important period. And I think you were alluding to the different structures in the award. So there's the first 6 months in the industry, of course, you're very green, you're coming in, it's termed sales associate. Right. After 6 months, you're still a sales associate, but there's a higher level of pay again. So always make sure that you log when somebody starts there.
And as a percentage, how much does that increase? About 5%, 10%?
I'm not great at percentages. It's probably your field, but I've got the actual figure. So the actual base is $34,975.20 for the first six months.
6 months, great.
And then after that, it goes up slightly. Got it here somewhere in all of my notes. It goes up to $36,200.32. So on an hourly basis, you start at $17.70 per hour. It goes up to $18.32. So it's correct. About a 60.
And that's current as of now?
That's current, yes. Yeah. So every year, the commission look at the minimum wage and they make a decision for the 1st of July as to whether there's going to be any new rates. So
so we should be mindful of every 1st of July to see if there's an increase.
That's right. Yes.
Where would someone find that information? So there's a lot of business owners out there that certainly don't have the luxury we have of having a human resources department.
Yeah.
Where do they find out that information?
Look, the Fair Work Commission, the Fair Work website's great. I find that a really handy resource. I think if you're a small business and you don't have someone in HR, I think it's really important to probably have a VECI membership. There are some private firms that also offer that resource.
Is VECI a government agency?
Yeah, the Victorian agency? Economic Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
Okay, and then for the other states, there would be other states, because that's Victoria.
Yes, yep, so the membership's about $1,000 a year.
I think invaluable, it's invaluable. So definitely. For $1,000, it can save you so much.
Yeah.
Heartache, but just the stress of trying to find out.
Well, being across the legislation, if you're not across the legislation, I mean, even I at times ring VECI just to make sure I've got the latest and that I've made the right decision around something. So it's always a good resource for me doing HR to just cross-check and make sure that I'm on the right path. So invaluable resource for business owners, I think.
Yeah, very good. Anything else that budding entrepreneurs or someone who's currently in business should be aware of in regards to employed sales agents?
Look, the onboarding process is very important when you're bringing a new employee on board. You know, I always think that it's important, and it is important in an HR role, to make sure that all your ducks are in a row from the start. So make sure that all of the paperwork's in place, that you've got proper letters of offer, and that those letters of offer talk about the conditions that are attached that form your full offer. And your conditions are things like having your agent rep and a valid police check as well. So you don't want someone, and having those before they start, because you don't want someone turning up on day one and they haven't got them, or there's an issue with the police check, and then all of a sudden you've employed someone that's not,
eligible
to do the job. So, those basic fundamentals, and then through to a company policy handbook, because, you know, within that 6 months probationary period, and at any point in time during someone's employment, if you haven't properly conveyed through your onboarding process, and also too, you know, for certain things, if you haven't gone over that legislation, then it's very difficult to discipline somebody on a breach of something if they're unaware that they shouldn't be doing, you know, what they've done. So it's important to make sure that everybody's across that from day one, everyone's on the same page, they've read, understood it, you've given them that opportunity to do that, as you would with a contract. And also in real estate as well, it's very important, personal safety is a real aspect as well. OH&S, yeah. So to make sure that person's aware of, you know, how they would conduct safe, open for inspections, and dealing with people, and how they present themselves, and just being responsible for their own safety and letting people know where they are at all times as well. So we do speak about that in our induction, and every office has a personal safety plan as well. And Also, safety calls as well if somebody's feeling uncomfortable and needs someone to come to their assistance. We have special codes that they can ring reception and let
So them it's know, it's so. It's really on the onus of the employer to make sure that they're in place. And there's something that, that a lot of people don't really touch on is the day that someone starts. Is we're into wow moments, and everyone should be into wow moments. We talk about wow moments for our clients, our landlords, our vendors, our purchasers. But what about the wow moments for our employees? So when we bring an employee into the organisation, we make sure that the desk is set up. We make sure that their computer is set up if we're supplying a computer. We make sure email addresses are set up. We make sure that there's a bunch of flowers and a bottle of wine on the day they start. Because as everyone can imagine, starting a new job, and especially it's extremely overwhelming, and especially if you come into this industry totally brand new, it's all foreign. Everyone's going 100 miles an hour, and that initial first day, that first impression is just so important to make sure that those people joining your team feel at home, feel that they've made the right decision. And that they can actually grow within the company. So that's really, really important to understand.
And even the basics of that, showing people where the bathrooms are, and OH&S always show them where the exits are. So when someone starts, you know, people see me taking this person through the building and introducing them to everybody, and you know, often get comments of, wow, you know, thank you for that. You've shown me where everything is and not just show me where my desk is. And I even do this with our temporary staff who astounded that we're doing that we're filling in the required paperwork that we should be filling in, as well as introducing them to everybody and making them feel welcome, because their experience as temporary staff is to just be shown a desk and their work, and there you get on with it. They sometimes don't even get introduced to people.
And people talk out there in the industry. So for temporary staff, so we're talking about temps, you know, short term. You know, especially in property management, where you might be short a property manager for a period of time, you need to bring in temp work. Their experience is amplified. If they've got a great experience with your organisation, they're going to talk about it with lots of other people. Definitely. And then if you have a great culture and a great name and reputation out there in the marketplace, you know, have that mentality of abundance, it'll come back to you. Do keep doing the right thing and it will come back to you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think then you become an employer of choice when you do those things. The word gets out there, and you know, I get contacted by property managers who say, oh, you know, you've got a friend of mine's temping for you and you've got a position available and I'd really love to apply because I've heard it's great there. So yeah, it's very good, works well.
It does, it does. Guys, I think anything else you'd like to add, Julie? Anything we've missed? I'm sure there's hundreds of things we've missed.
And, well, you could probably
and my mind's going 100 miles an hour. I'm thinking, okay, we've got to have another topic about this, another topic about that. But in this, it's been fantastic. It's always it's great having you, obviously, as
Thank
part of the
you.
Team for the last 2 years. We certainly have seen a great difference in our performance as an employer, and making sure that we are meeting our obligations and creating an environment of, you know, a fun place to be. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Mouse.
And we'll look forward to interviewing in another session.
Yes, we could talk forever about HR, definitely.
Yeah. And look, before I close off in this, I will go on to a commission split and how you should be calculating your commission, how much you're actually earning from each sale. So we're going to talk about a property sale of, say, $500,000. So we've sold at $500,000. Okay, and we're charging the vendor 2.2%. So the commission we're charging in total is $11,000. Now, that includes GST. The first thing we need to do is take off the GST. So when you're calculating your GCI, so when we talk about people writing $1 million in GCI, which is what I'm really hoping, people are taking out the GST. So in this instance, we know GST is calculated by just dividing what we charge the vendor by 11. And GST in this example is going to work out to $1,000. So what we call your GCI that you've earned from this sale is $10,000. Okay. Now, if you're on a 50-50 split, 50% to the office, 50% to you, your allocation is $5,000.
Now, depending on the way that your employment agreement works, that may include superannuation, or it could be 50% to you plus superannuation. If it's plus, then we have to add 9.5% to that, which works out to $450 for super. If the $5,000 includes the superannuation, then you divide it by 100 by 9.5, and that will get you to about $4,550. And then that makes up the $5,000. Hopefully that makes it clear. And that's a great, really simple. If you're on 60-40, then of course you'll get $6,000. If you're on a 70-30 split, 70 to yourself, 30 to the office, it'll be $7,000 and $3,000 to the office. What's important to understand is your 50% plus or minus super, which is the 9.5%. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. Let's work on another example. So a lot of people operate this way, where they take off franchise fees and also some marketing levies. So again, the same example, $500,000 on the property sale, 2.2%. We charge the vendor, is charged $11,000. Now, vendor paid advertising is always on top, so just remember that. The GST to calculate your GCI is $1,000, left with $10,000. But let's just pretend in your office that they've got an agreement that you're going to be paid 50-50 on the commission split, less, say, a 10% franchise fee, and say a $500 marketing levy. Now, some organizations charge both, some organizations charge one or the other, some organizations charge none. There's no right or wrong, because different organizations provide different services. Whether they do provide for all your marketing that you don't pay for, you need to contribute some of your commission to that marketing. They might be supplying you with sales support. They might be supplying you with people to do your photography or your building inspections. So as a sales agent, please don't think of it just one way. And of course, as a business owner, don't look at it that we can deduct all these fees and still make it worthwhile to your sales agents. Transparency is the total key when engaging employed sales agents. So if we look at it in this example, and say the franchise fee of 10% comes off. So 10% of the $10,000 is $1,000. So you're left with $9,000. And let's just pretend there's a marketing levy of $500 that's got to be taken away, leaves you with $8,500. I hope you can see that. And let's just pretend you're getting paid 50% on that total. 50% of 8,500 works out to $4,250. So in effect, in this example, you're not really on 50% of the total commission. You're on 42.5%. Again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it's really a clear indication to understand how much you'll make from this. And of course, the higher the commission that you charge a vendor, if that marketing levy stays at $500, your percentage will increase just that little bit. And of course, the lower the commission that you charge, say this was an example of $8,000, you'll actually drop to around 40%. So just a really simple way to calculate what commission you're actually earning from each particular sale. And I'm sure there's gonna be lots of questions. So if you do have questions, or you do want some clarification on how you're getting remunerated, or how you should be remunerated, or if you're a business owner wanting some advice of what's fair and reasonable, please drop us a line, drop a comment on the comments below, and we'll start a conversation. On what's right and what's wrong. Or that, again, it's not a question of what's right and what's wrong, of what works for the sales agent and what works for the business. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed it, and see you at the next episode.